Luca, the latest movie from Disney and Pixar, whisks us across the globe and into a fictional coastal Italian town in the 1950s. There, the titular young hero and his new friend Alberto get into adventures and dream of buying their own Vespa.
But there's a catch. In a quite literal take on the fish-out-of-water story, Luca and Alberto are humans on land, and unbeknownst to the rest of the townspeople, sea monsters when wet. Hijinks ensue as they attempt to keep their identities a secret from their new friends and foes. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Aisha Harris. And today we're talking about Luca on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Glenn is Kathy Tu and Tobin Lowe, the former hosts of the Nancy podcast. Tobin is now an editor with This American Life, and Kathy is now a supervising producer for the New York Times opinion audio team. Welcome back to you both, Kathy and Tobin.
Thank you.
Hello.
So the premise of Luca might seem a little bit familiar. Luca, a young sea monster voiced by Jacob Tremblay, yearns to explore the world above shore. But his mom, Daniela, voiced by Maya Rudolph, warns him to stay clear of the land monsters and forbids him from visiting. Hello, Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. Of course, curious tween sea monsters will be curious tween sea monsters, and Luca finds his way ashore. He meets another free-spirited monster named Alberto, voiced by Jack Dylan Grazer, who introduces Luca to their shared magical ability to become humans as soon as they encounter dry land. The two become fast friends as Luca spends more and more time away from the water, hanging with Alberto. A series of plot machinations and an obsession with owning their own Vespa leads the pair to the nearby town of Porta Rossa, where they befriend Julia, voiced by Emma Berman, who is determined to finally win the local triathlon. They team up with her to beat the reigning champion and all-around jerk, Ercole Visconti, voiced by Saverio Raimondo. They must also keep their identities a secret, as there is a hefty reward out for the capture of sea monsters. Enrico Casarosa directed the film, which is available today to stream on Disney+. So this is the second Pixar movie to come out since the pandemic began, and it actually feels unlike a lot of Pixar movies before to have kind of flown under the radar. I'm not sure if you all feel the same way. I don't feel like it's had quite the same publicity, the same hype leading into it. And I wonder how many people are actually even aware that this movie is coming out. Let's start with you, Tobin. What were your expectations, if you had any, going into this? And were they met? Were you satisfied? Did you like Luca?
Well, I'll kick us off with a real hot take, which is that I love this movie. I liked it. It was very sweet and good. I agree that there's not as much hype around this film. And if I were to guess why that might be, I think that this movie is up to some very simple, good, aimed at children ambitions. Mm-hmm. It's not like Soul. It's not like Inside Out, where you sort of sense the filmmakers sort of winking and saying, like, we're really doing a thing here. There's an intellectual level here that adults will appreciate. This movie, with its sort of fable-like quality, is something that my nephews and niece could watch and they would get every beat. There's nothing going over their head. They're going to follow it all. And then I will say, I sort of thought going through it that in its simplicity that I would get out tear-free, that I would sort of escape not crying like I usually do at Pixar films. And then the last scene got me so good, and I was sobbing, and there was, I thought, something really interesting they were trying to say about the nature of friendships and when we outgrow them and what we need from people who come in and out of our lives that I really loved, and I thought was interesting that they're dealing with, that I really liked. The last thing I'll say before I pass it on is that the accent work in this film is all over the place in terms of who's giving you Italian English, who's giving you just straight up English. But I did not mind because I felt across the board the performances were really lovely, especially Jacob Tremblay, who's in the Luca seat. He, I thought, was did a really lovely job in this movie. So yeah, all around, really liked it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the accent work because that was something I definitely noticed. But I agree that Jacob Tremblay, especially for a kid actor, you know, he's still very young, is really expressive and I think really did a great job with that role. Kathy, what did you think about Luca?
Well, going into it, I didn't hear all that much about it. And I would argue that I am not their target audience for this film and that I don't generally enjoy children's movies. But I always give Pixar a shot because I feel like there's always something there for me. So when I started the film, I definitely thought, oh, this is going to be The Little Mermaid meets Call Me By Your Name for sure. And that was really weird.
I don't think there are any peaches involved there.
No, no peaches were harmed.
It was just very, very similar to both those films in a weird way. But very, very quickly sort of became its own story. And I enjoyed it. I thought, I agree with Tobin, it was very simple. It was definitely meant for kids. But yeah, that last scene, I texted Tobin being like, am I emotional or am I human now? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that scene kind of sneaks up on you in a similar way as, for me at least, last year's Onward, the Disney film that came out right before the pandemic. That movie also, I felt, was kind of very squarely aimed at kids. And then there's a final scene where it's like, oh, no, we're gonna take you there. We're going to take you to those feelings and you won't be able to let go. Glenn, how do you feel about this film?
I liked it, too. I mean, this thing is clearly brought to you by the Italian Tourism Board and by Vespa.
Vespa, yes.
This is an extended ad for Vespas. When you walk into your next Vespa showroom, they're going to have this thing on a loop if they know what's good for them.
What's that?
Oh, it's just the greatest thing that humans ever made. The Vespa.
Whoa.
You just sit on it, and it takes you anywhere you want to go. In the whole stinking world.
Vespa is freedom.
You know, in the interviews, the director has said it's a personal story about him growing up in Genoa, based on his relationship with his best friend. Now, film is famously a collaborative medium, none more so than animated films, particularly digital animated films, which are not just made by a committee, but they are made by teams of committees. And the one thing that sets a good Pixar Disney film apart is that you can still discern through all of those layers and layers of people an individual voice, an individual vision. If you can discern it, if something comes through, something idiosyncratic, and I think it does here. He has said in interviews, he's paying homage to Fellini with a bit of Miyazaki thrown in, to which I say, okay, settle down. That's a high bar to clear. But you know what's a very realistic bar to clear is better than Onward. And I think it clears that bar really well. There's no shame in being mid-tier Disney Pixar. I think there's absolutely no shame in that. And the one thing I do want to say about the accents, it strikes me that when they cast Italian voice actors, they're the ones who are speaking English with an Italian accent. And when they cast non-Italian voice actors, they don't have an accent, which is great. I like that because that's how you avoid the it's-a-me problem, right? So there is a through line there, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I found this film to be aggressively fine. And so I have to dissent a little bit. I agree with all of your assessments in the fact that it is clearly, I think, aimed a little bit more towards children than it is to their parents or to the adults like myself who would be watching and going to a Pixar film. I did like the fact that once it broke away from this Little Mermaid storyline, it felt a little bit fresher. But I also think, and this is, I think it's more of a me problem per se than it is the film's problem, but I just expect more from Pixar. And I've been kind of let down the last few movies. Like I was kind of tepid on Soul as well, which I think had obviously grander ambitions in terms of just scope and vision, if not visually. I think, I will say Luca, I think visually is just really beautiful to look at. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But I don't know, I felt kind of like Pixar has kind of plateaued for me, and that's fine. No company is going to be on top all the time. And I still think this is far better than Onward and lots of other movies that have come out. But I was also just kind of left kind of cold, and I wish I wasn't, but that was kind of how I felt about it. It just didn't resonate with me in the same way. I did feel a little bit emotional at the end, but I definitely wasn't crying. And I'm trying to think of the last Pixar film that I cried at. And it might have been Coco, which is like four years ago now. So maybe I'm just a cold-hearted person, or I was just in a space and I wasn't in the right space at the moment. But yeah, I wanted a little bit more.
Can I say in defense of the tears that I did cry as a human being at the end?
You don't have to defend your tears. I'm glad for you. Yes, I'm glad you had those tears.
But I do want to say, I feel like sometimes with Pixar films, like you mentioned Coco, which I did love, and other films that like are famous for making you cry and feel things. There is a thing with Pixar Disney films sometimes where you can see the tears coming a mile away. Like they're building this thing for emotion, and you're going to get the moment where Bing Bong disappears into the dust, or, you know, like you're going to get Coco reuniting with his grandmother and singing the song. Like there's something where you're crying, but you're also like, damn it, I knew you were going to do this to me. So I did like the sort of smallness of this movie, that I feel like they earned that emotional moment, maybe in a way that didn't feel quite as manipulative as it's been sometimes in the past. As much as I love those films that manipulate me into feeling so much.
Yeah.
I kind of like the smaller ambition of this last moment. So in defense of that, I did like it.
I will also say that I think for a movie that's targeted towards children, I think I just have a lower bar when it comes to storytelling. So I think for me, I knew the story was going to be simple, and I think I just was fine with that. I did find the visuals just beautiful. I really like the sort of kind of claymation, but definitely their 3D animation type thing going on. And I just truly love Vespas, so they really got me with that.
Yeah.
They did their job.
I definitely went to their website, and I was like, is there a Luca-themed thing going on here? Couldn't find anything, but I do love a Vespa.
They're leaving lira on the floor. They're leaving euros on the floor if they're not doing that. I think the simplicity that we've been talking about here is a feature, not a bug, because usually with Disney Pixar films, there's so much, and I talk about this all the time, there's so much lore. There's so much homework you have to do to kind of understand the world building. This, they get wet their fish. Boom, done. That's the entire world building that we need to keep track of. There's nothing else. I mean, yeah, the triathlon, I guess, is kind of complicated, but it's not abstract at all. It's very simple. I really like the work of Saverio Raimondo as Ercole. That's a really interesting take on a bully, I think. He's a bully who believes himself to be beloved by everyone and that everyone wants to watch him eat sandwiches. Now, that is weird.
Emma, who wants to watch me eat a big sandwich?
That's what I mean. That's a little bit of idiosyncrasy that makes this film seem individuated, I guess.
Yeah, and I want to say there were definitely moments that I really enjoyed. I like the fact that Ercole, his age is kind of ambiguous. Like, are you a grown man or are you a teenager who's the same age as these kids? Because it's kind of, they make a joke about it at one point. I also really loved seeing Luca's parents. There's a moment where they're on land and they realize that if they push some of the kids into a fountain, they will be able to tell if it's their kid or not because they haven't seen him in his human form. So I love that little kind of fun moment. So there were definitely things that I appreciated about it. I guess I just was in the mood for something a little more meaty, and I knew I wasn't going to get that, but it's fine.
I was expecting more from Maya Rudolph. Not that the performance is fine, but like she's known for putting a little extra mustard on every line reading, a little extra paprika, a little something. And it seems like in the directing, they consistently chose her most straight ahead takes. You're kind of leaving a Maserati in the garage when you do that to Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're forgetting my favorite character in the entire film, which is the cat. I don't know the cat's name, but that cat knew what was going on and just couldn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm.
That is a staple of Disney Pixar. The one animal or inanimate object that can't speak, but has all the great, great facial expressions and moments.
Yeah.
Or sounds. What did you all think of? We haven't talked at all really about Julia, their friend, who's voiced by Emma Berman. And she's kind of this very spunky, determined to win a triathlon. Also, I love that the triathlon includes eating. It's like an eating contest.
This isn't any old race. It's an epic, grueling, traditional Italian triathlon. Swimming, cycling, and eating pasta. So you need a teammate.
Well, we'll figure it out. Thanks, human girl.
So that was very fun. But what did you think of her character and the way in which she befriends both Alberto and Luca?
You know, you talked about parts of this film feeling like aggressively fine. I would put her role in this film as a little bit tropey, a little bit fine. Like, I like the character and I like the dynamic of the three of them together. It feels a little less finely drawn, her role in all of this. The same way I would put also the parents, if we're talking about Maya Rudolph, like, there's a little bit of a tropey, just like overprotective parents. We don't really find out if there's a root of that fear that they have about their son going away from home. So, yeah, I enjoyed her character. I sort of felt like it was less specific than these two central boys and their friendship and how they relate to each other. But maybe I'm alone in that. I don't know.
I, too, wanted more from her. I did think that the sort of final moment we get with her was kind of touching. And I enjoyed especially the animation of her father and just that whole dynamic and how he's just this big hulking figure with this like very small face and very distinct features who doesn't say much, but he can read his facial expressions and it's great. So, yeah, I thought it was an interesting dynamic, but I do think the central relationship is Alberto and Luca, and it's cute. I will say it's cute. even if I wasn't totally engrossed by the story, it was cute.
Yeah, I'd watch a sequel where I find out what happens to the two of them and the cat, you know? I want to see what happens.
Yeah. I love the animation of it. I love the look of the film. How far Pixar has come with animating hair. Like, oh my God. Right. Toy Story with the, like, helmet that moves with them. And then...
I mean, to be fair, they were supposed to be plastic toys.
Yes. But even, like, the human characters, right? Like, the mom in Toy Story or That's Andy. Fair. It's fair. Like... Obviously, I understand how technology works, that it gets better with time. But I do have to say, anytime Luca's hair and sort of the trusses and the curl and how it moved, I was like, oh my God, this has gotten so much better. It's like another character here.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that was actually a thought I had when I was watching Soul. Like, the way in which the saxophone player, the lady saxophone player,
totally,
who's voiced by Angela
absolutely.
Bassett, and that her hair, this flowing big afro, was just so gorgeous. And you could see, like, all the little curls and coils. Like,
absolutely.
So, Tobin, you're right. They have come a long way.
Well, I didn't even notice that, but I did notice that in Luca, the pasta looked especially delicious. So that's also got to be... Same family there. Same family.
Yes, absolutely. Well, tell us what you think about Luca. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it'll be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
What happens after a police officer shoots someone who's unarmed? For decades in California, internal affairs investigations, how the police themselves, were secret. Until now. Listen to On Our Watch, a podcast from NPR and KQED.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy This Week. Tobin, let's start with you.
What's making me happy this week is a new book of essays by J.P. Brammer. It's called Ola Poppy, which is the same name as his advice column, which he's been doing for a couple years now. And it is all the signature things that I love about his column, which is that he answers advice questions, but does it in this very personal, funny way that touches on being Latinx, that touches on being queer. And it's just hilarious and heartfelt. And the book is no different than what I love about his column. So it's called Ola Poppy by J.P. Brammer.
And he's always right. So.
And he's always right. Yeah.
Great pick. Thank you for that, Tobin. Kathy, what is making you happy this week?
I think this is a thing that's been making me happy all pandemic long. And that is the show This Is Us that I watch every single week. And it's the only thing that makes me feel emotions, generally. So,
Except for Luca.
Except for Luca, which I was surprised by. So usually it's just This Is Us. It's a show that tells the story of one family, but they like to jump around in time and show you the past, the present, the future. And it's I think it's a unique storytelling technique that I don't see that often in like a primetime drama. So I just, you know, I love a family drama. It makes me feel things.
Nice. Well, all I have to say about This Is Us is Sterling K. Brown, Sterling K. Brown.
Yes.
Sterling K. Brown.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Glenn, my friend, what is making you happy this week?
Well, the actor Ned Beatty died recently. That's not what's making me happy, but people were sharing their favorite moments, as you do. And I kept seeing this one scene from the film Network, in which, you know, it's a very small role in terms of screen time, but a huge impact on that film. He plays the chairman of the conglomerate that owns the network that Peter Finch's Howard Beale is preaching his populist message. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. But then that message threatens the conglomerate's bottom line. So Ned Beatty calls him into his office and has this amazing speech that just convinces him to switch to a different kind of message, a message of consumerism. It's a very electrifying scene. And I had remembered a very similar speech that Beatty gives on the television show MASH when he was a guest star. He played the kind of visiting chaplain who was a supervisor of the MASH unit's chaplain, Father Mulcahy. And there's a scene where he gets behind the pulpit in the mess tent and just castigates Father Mulcahy for not being electrifying enough as a charismatic leader.
You've got to be the drum major that leads this band right into the valley of blessedness. You have to use that voice of yours, Father, as a cry into the wilderness. Follow me, you see. Follow me. Lead the attack, Father, with a Bible in one hand and a sword in the other.
Hallelujah.
I figured, okay, so this is that poor guy getting typecast. You know, he does the scene in Network, and then they just kind of farm him out to do the same thing. But I was reminded on Twitter by Justin McGuire, thank you, Justin, that episode of MASH aired in November 1975, a full year before Network came out in 1976. So it's kind of reversed. Maybe he got the role because of that MASH scene. But you can see it. It's in the 11th episode of the fourth season of MASH. It's an episode called Dear Peggy that you can find streaming places. He was a very versatile actor. You know, shout out to his work as Otis in Superman the movie, of course, but he's always great and he always brings something very specific to what he's doing.
Yeah, what a career, Ned Beatty. Also played Lotso Bear in Toy Story 3, another Pixar film. Villain. Mm-hmm. So what's making me happy this week is that I started rewatching Insecure from the beginning, and they just finished wrapping the fifth and final season. So I'm prepping and reminding myself of all the things that I've forgotten about it at the beginning. And one thing that I didn't forget about, but has been crystallized for me again on this rewatch, is how great the music in this show is. The music supervisor over most of the seasons has been Kier Lehman, and he just does a really great job of finding the right moods, finding musicians who might be a little bit under the radar, but who are just like on the cusp of being great. And the official Spotify playlist I've had for several years now, and I highly recommend everyone listen to it. It's great. I enjoy it for working when I don't need to concentrate too hard, but when I need like something to pep me up, because there's a lot of great like girl rappers rapping about really feminist things, and I love it. You have like Victoria Monet, Lion Babe, Vince Staples, Thundercat. It's just got a great range of R&B and a little bit of electronic and hip hop, and it's just really fun. So Insecure is making me happy, but especially the music, the Spotify playlists. Everyone should check it out if you haven't already. And that is what's making me happy this week. And if you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations exclusive to the newsletter, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Crafting My Style. Follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Tobin at Tobin Lowe. And you can follow Kathy 2 at _Kathy2. You can follow editor Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy. Our producer Candace Lim at TheCandaceLim. Producer Jared Gare at Jared M. Gare. And you can follow producer Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to you all for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all next week when we will be talking about the return of Tuca and Birdie.